This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Andrew Collins is here this week instead of Mark Kermode to take a look at the week's movies for you. It's Phil Williams with you on 5 Live for a Friday afternoon. Andrew will be looking at Sex and the City and then a whole host of other movies that you've probably never heard of and are unlikely to. Is that fair?
That's really mean.
Is that mean?
Well, no, it's probably true. And the only one you might actually get at your local multiplex is one that I'm going to tell you not to go and see.
So. Oh, okay, all right. Well, we'll discuss those in a moment. Sex and the City, though, obviously, is the big film. Should we have a clip from the movie?
Yeah, well, this basically gives you the entire plot of the movie in one lovely quote.
So, the other night, Bing and I were talking about, you know, moving in together and our future and, you know, what makes sense as we move forward. And, well, we decided to get married.
And I'm deaf.
Oh, I'm so excited!
Everybody is looking.
Sorry! I'm so sorry, everyone, but this is my friend, and she just got engaged, and she has been going out with the man for 10 years!
That would be the demographic audience cheering because their programme that they thought was never coming back and was never even going to be made into a movie has been made into one, and it's like watching a whole, well, 2, 3, 4 episodes all stitched together in one sitting.
Sex and the City, obviously the big release this week, so we'll get Andrew's proper review just after 5:30, but he wants to hear from you if you're a woman and you've seen it, and if you're a gay man and you've seen it. 0500 909 693, and if you're a straight man and you've been dragged along to see it, we make that assumption. I mean, we did get a few straight men saying they were fans of it on Wednesday.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've become a fan of it. I started out like a lot of blokes going, oh, this is not for me. I almost wanted to cover my ears. Surely this is not meant for me. I don't want to hear this. I don't want to hear what they're talking about. It's so frank and, oh dear, no, surely I'd rather not know. And then as the thing was progressing over the years that it was on, I started to sit in the room when it was on and eventually turned to like it because, you know, it was well written and funny. But what we thought of the film, we'll find out later. But I really would love to hear from people who've seen it. It's quite nice to review a film that's already out and has already made £4.1 million or something.
In 3 days?
Well, in one day, I think it made that.
Really?
Yeah, I think it must be pounds rather than dollars if it's this country. And it's interesting it's released here in this country before New York, for instance, which is maybe today it's released in New York.
Right.
So, yeah.
Let's go through the box office top 10 then.
Yes.
And we'll start off at 10. A film I would like to see and haven't seen, but the trailer looks intriguing, In Bruges.
Brilliant. You really should see In Bruges while it's still knocking about. It's a comedy, but not just a laugh-out-loud comedy. It's a sort of comedy thriller set in Bruges, amazingly, in the Belgian city. And it's Colin Farrell, who I really haven't got a great deal of time for, but he's really good in this, and he's paired up with Brendan Gleeson, two fine Irish actors, and they really hit it off. They're two hitmen. They're stuck waiting for some instructions, basically. It's like waiting for Godot or something. There's a load of violence towards the end, but mainly it's about the relationship between these two guys, the younger and the older man. And the older man wants to go tourist sort of, you know, destinations, and Colin Farrell's just bored and wants to get drunk. So it's like it's kind of a tourist film.
At Belgium. 9, a film that a lot of people were just coming out of when I was going in to watch Casey Affleck's film this week, Sukkar Banat, or Caramel, to give it its English title.
Yeah, it's kind of Sex and the City in Beirut, which actually sounds quite appealing, and it is. It's another film that you'd think might be aimed at women, but there's no reason why men can't go and enjoy it. It's just about a lot of women, and it's centred around a kind of beauty parlour in Beirut. Very good.
At 8, Doomsday?
Not really for me. Mark Kermode loves this one, really likes it. It's basically after the apocalypse, Scotland is quarantined. So if that appeals to you, either as a nationalistic Scot or as an anti-Scottish person, then go and see it. There's a lot of violence and swords.
At 7, Maid of Honour.
Oh, wedding-based romantic comedy starring real big hitters, Patrick Dempsey and Michelle Monaghan. This is really, you know, I would say it's like an Argos version of, you know, go and see a proper romantic comedy, but that's an insult to Argos, and I would never say that. There's nothing wrong with Argos.
At 6, Speed Racer.
Speed Racer. People don't like this. A lot of money been spent on it. A lot of computer graphics. It's about racing. The Wachowski brothers have done it, who did The Matrix. And Speed Racer is actually the name of the main character. His first name is Speed, and his second name is Racer. If that appeals to you, then go and see it.
Is that all we need to know?
That's all you need to know, really. The man's called Speed Racer.
I've never met anybody called Speed.
It's like if you were thinking, we've got a great idea for a film, Speed Racer. How do we justify that? Well, we can have the main character called Speed Racer. No, you can just
make
it.
The other equivalent to that, which you'll know better than I, is when they justify the title of a film based on a song title.
Yeah, that's true. They absolutely do that. And a lot of chick lit, I hate using that phrase, sorry, are based on song titles as well, aren't they? I Can't Live If Living Is Without You. Pink cover, stiletto, sell millions.
Nothing wrong with that.
That's not been done. No, there's nothing wrong with it, but I don't think it's
Write it down.
Too late. Somebody's already written it down.
At five, Nims Island.
Yeah, Abigail Breslin, who was so excellent in Little Miss Sunshine and was Oscar-nominated for that indie film, obviously, you know, on the fringes. Now she's in a kind of mainstream family movie with Jodie Foster playing the adult. And you have to hope that Jodie Foster gave some little tips on how to survive being a child star, which she did. And it's a good family film, really, if you like that kind of thing.
At four, a film that I enjoyed until the end, and then I understood what Mark meant when he talked about the dodgy sexual politics of the film, Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yeah, and what it is, it's an American film from the stable of Judd Apatow, who gave us Knocked Up and Superbad, and the best thing in it is Russell Brand. I don't know if you agree. I mean, he's the kind of token Englishman in it, and he doesn't really stretch himself in terms of the character he plays, but actually he's very good. I think he comes off
He is very good. Very good. I'm not a Russell Brand fan per se, but he's very good in this film. I also thought there were some decent lines in the film. The point at which I don't want to give too much away, but the point at which Mark's questioned the sexual politics, he's probably right to do so.
Yeah, absolutely. But you could question the sexual politics of Judd Apatow's other films as well if you really wanted to.
But they're comedies. Is that the idea? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Just let it go.
Yeah, you could just say that, or you could be like Mark and be cross about it. I tend to get too cross about these things. I should calm down.
See, as you're getting older, you're actually mellowing, aren't you?
No, I really am not.
Are you
if
not?
Only I was. If only I thought that might happen. Most people become more kind of conservative and tolerant. I'm becoming more and more cross on a day-by-day basis, yeah. About the smallest little things.
It's because you keep moving house, you see. It's the most stressful. So I remember a history teacher coming to one of our sixth form lessons once with his tie right around his neck, and it was an all-boys school. And he said, "Gentlemen, before we start the history, a vital life lesson for you. The three most stressful things that can happen in a man's life are a death in the family, a divorce, and moving house." And then he looked at us and he said, "And one almost caused the other two this weekend." And we all sat there at 17 thinking, "What's he on about?" And now we know.
I like it. Anger is an energy, as John Lydon once sang. And I think he's right. We could probably power the world with our anger if we just used it correctly.
There's a thought from our last interview. Maybe we could suck up the CO2 using our energy. At three, a film I thoroughly enjoyed, Iron Man.
And me. Thought it was excellent. A really good Marvel comic book superhero adaptation with Robert Downey Jr., who's perfect in the part as Tony Stark, who builds a great big metal suit and basically fights people. But fights on behalf of the good people, obviously, and it's got a kind of weird sort of
because he used
war
to supply
subtext.
Weapons to the bad.
Yeah, he's an arms dealer, basically, and he sees the light. Yeah, it's very, very good. It's a little bit noisy at the end, but up to that point, I heard somebody say that their very young child who saw it with them thought the first half was boring, and that's the best half. So if you're a small child, you'll find the first half boring, but the second half exciting. And if you're a grown-up, you'll find the first half very interesting.
Yeah, because
the second half, not so good.
I can see that, because the first half's more about the relationships between the characters.
Yeah, and it's a setup as well. It's the first of what will probably be a series of films.
Yeah, I think he confirmed there's a trilogy already signed.
Yeah, there has to be. And why not? I would.
The interesting thing is, I felt, and he talked about this on Jonathan Ross, he said he'd amended the script quite a lot. And I felt that there was a lot of his kind of humour. If you see some of the films, he's more akin to doing.
He's an offbeat character, and I like it when somebody like him from the fringes gets put into this huge box office aimed blockbuster and does well. So it's good for him. He's made it.
At two, What Happens in Vegas, which I haven't seen. So what does happen in Vegas?
Well, basically, what always happens in comedies about Vegas, two people get drunk and get married. There's a kind of... It's Cameron Diaz and Ashton Kutcher. They get married. This is at the beginning. It's not giving anything away. But they also win a lot of money. And for some reason, the judge says you have to stay together for 6 months or you can't keep the money. And in that 6 months, they have a lot of rows. And you have to work out where you think they might get it off. Get it on, sorry, in the end. Not get it off. But get it on in the end.
Do you think that...
I'm quite bored even thinking about it. But, you know, these kind of films do hit the right
buttons. Without wishing so Nikki too much, right? I saw the poster in a bus stop.
that was enough, wasn't it?
She's hanging off his waist.
Yeah.
In a kind of kooky way, I believe the Americans.
I don't like the way they've used their surnames at the top now. I don't think they're ready for
Kutcher,
it.
Diaz.
Kutcher, it's not happening for me.
Do you think he married Demi Moore in Vegas?
No, I think that he actually loves her very much. So, you know, what are you suggesting about their marriage? That it's based in some way on a flimsy pretext?
No, I just wondered if you knew more than I.
No, I think they're mad about each other. They're still married, for heaven's sake. They've been married forever in Hollywood terms, haven't they?
5 minutes.
It's obviously happening for them.
The number one film, it will not surprise you to hear, in the UK this week, according to the box office, is Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
May well be knocked off very shortly by Sex and the City, which took more money per cinema, apparently, in its first day than Indiana Jones took last week. A lot of critics are very down on the Indiana Jones film. A bit disappointed. I actually enjoyed it all the way through and started to wonder if maybe I'm losing it. You know, that I actually enjoyed it very much, like a member of the public might. Maybe I'm not a film critic after all. But I've thought about it, and I thought, no, I liked the long chase sequences.
Can you not be both? Can you not be a film critic and a member of the
public? I am a film critic who pays to go and see films. I paid to go and see Sex and the City yesterday. I do that a lot. I prefer it. I prefer to go to a cinema because
you gauge a real reaction.
Yeah, because I work for the Radio Times, so it's not essential that I see all the new films every week. It's essential that I see them before they arrive on television. And I do get invited to a lot of screenings, and I don't always go to them. I often go when the film comes out, and I enjoy it more.
No, I like you. I paid to go and see this film, and I went last Thursday, the night it came out. There was a huge amount of excitement in our circle of friends. Four of us went, and I thought, yeah, it's fine. I absolutely enjoyed it. It's very similar to the other three.
Yeah.
I just feel that, especially with films like Bourne, that cinema's moved on so much now that I felt it was all a bit slow.
Well, I know what you mean, but that, I think, is a good thing, because if they'd done loads and loads of computer graphics and made it more like, you know, a modern film, loads and loads of fast cuts and stuff, I don't think it would have been so good. I think we'd have complained about that. But they've basically done it as if they would have done a couple of years after the last Indiana Jones film, and that, I think, is a good thing. I love the fact that Spielberg and Lucas are sort of harking back to the good old days with proper stunt work and stuff like that. There's a lot of stuff in it which is really clearly stuntmen throwing themselves around, which is good to see.
Do you remember the last time me and you appeared on Radio 5 Live together and you ended up upsetting young people?
That's only because I generalised about young people.
But do you know who you've upset now?
Well, I don't know who.
You've upset a gay man.
Why? Why? For saying that this film is aimed at, Sex and the City is aimed at?
Yes.
Two demographics.
As a gay man, I resent your stereotypical attitude, says this text. By the way, I don't like the village people either.
That's very good. I don't make the rules, sir. This is what I always read about Sex and the City. They tell me that these are the two large demographics that are keeping this film at the top of the
box. So that's not your assertion, that's the...
Certainly not my assertion.
The word from the marketing
people. I hate it when I get told that a film is aimed at women. So I think that's... Why the hell is that? Chick lit, as I say, it upsets me to think about chick lit, but you can see how it's aimed. You can see what's going on there, can't you?
Nida, who's emailed us, says, just what the world needs, 2.5 hours of four hideously unlikable women talking about the only three topics that interest them, clothes, men and themselves. It's mean-spirited, navel-gazing, boring, witless, miserable, repetitive, profoundly depressing indictment of contemporary culture that is and has always been a viciously misogynistic portrayal of narcissistic women who don't really exist in the real world.
I don't need to review it now, do I? Save me the bother. Thank you very much.
Then Nida adds, not that I've seen the film or anything.
No.
But if proper critics can do that to Ken Loach, I can do it to Sarah Jessica Thingamabob. Fair enough, isn't it? Thank you very much.
Not proper critics.
Hi, Phil and Andrew. I've just come out of Sex and the City and I'm a gay man. I loved it. Witty dialogue, very well written. I've not laughed this much out loud in a cinema for years. Yes, it's all about money and labels, but it's also about friendship. And how great to have a film with four middle-aged female protagonists. And that's from Tom.
So that's a good point, actually. That is a very good point, because Samantha turns 50 in this film, you know, and that's seen as a great event, and they say you still look fabulous at 50. So, you know, in Hollywood terms, that is pretty pretty remarkable.
Have your review.
Well, you know, the demographic thing, you know, I don't mean to make light of entire groups of people, entire genders, entire groups based on sexual preference, but that does seem to be the case, which is why I'd be interested to know if a woman doesn't like it, for instance, or if a gay man doesn't like it, or a straight man does or doesn't like it. You know, as a straight man, I am basically stereotyped in this film and in the series as either dopey or unreliable. They're pretty much the only straight men in the film, aren't they? Or in the series. So, you know, I could be offended by how it portrays straight men. By and large, the women are better off without them in this film, aren't they? Which is an empowering thing. And obviously, after years and years of patriarchal repression, they need this, and that's good. But I think there is some. It's a very sharp film. It's funny. You don't get bored. But actually, not all of the characters get a proper story. It's really only Carrie who gets the big story and Miranda who gets the story as well. And apart from that, the other two don't really get very much to do. So I think you'd actually get more equality in an episode. They'd be more careful about making sure everybody had something to do. But nevertheless, it is enjoyable, but it is pornography. It's a pornography of labels. There's one section where Carrie has to model loads and loads of wedding dresses for Vogue. So it's product placement for Vogue. She speaks of the designers who made the dresses. Then we see the dresses in sort of fetishistic detail. And it's just, normally, if you see an Apple computer getting flipped up in a film, you just think product placement. Mm. In this film, you barely notice an Apple computer being flipped up because everything is product placement. And I found that slightly worrying. I always wondered when I used to watch the programme if it was in some way satirical of consumerism. But it isn't. It's just basic celebration of consumerism. And if that is what defines women in New York, which is certainly the message, then maybe that's not a good thing.
Well, lots been made of the fashion part of this film, and indeed it was for the series. And the designer, whose name escapes me now, Patricia somebody or other, she's now doing a line for Marks and Spencer.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd never heard of Manolo Blahnik, is that the name?
Yeah.
Who makes shoes. This is presumably the name of a person. And now I have. That's amazing, isn't it? Brilliant product placement. I have heard of a man who makes shoes, which I had not done before this programme
started. Had you heard of Jimmy Choo?
And another name that now I know about. So it's working, you know, it's really doing a great job for the fashion industry in flogging it. And also there's a scene in it, which is not giving anything away about the plot, where they kind of slum it, the ladies, and they go to a kind of ordinary family restaurant and have meatballs, and there's a grapefruit with a cherry on it, which is obviously supposed to go, look how crap this place is. But actually, the next scene, they're at some beautiful glittering launch of something. So it's not really, they're not really... They're just having a little go at being normal. But ultimately, they live this glamorous lifestyle, which none of us can lead.
Now, see, I'm hopeless with fashion. And when I used to be the entertainment correspondent here, and I was always asked about the fashion at the Oscars, and I don't know, she's wearing a red one. I've no idea at all.
That's good enough for me, red one or blue one. I don't know anything about fashion. Girls only go to New York for two things, beginning with L, which is love and labels. That's what Carrie says in this film. So if that's true, if you think that's true, then you should go and see the film. It's going to storm it, this film. Storm it.
OK, let's have another clip of it. Do you know what the second...
Yeah, this one is actually one of the funnier moments, and it's about, well, let's be honest, they're waxing lyrical in this clip.
The sun feels nice.
Jesus, honey, wax much?
What? I didn't know I was going to be wearing a bathing suit.
What are you talking about?
I forgot to wax. I've had other things on my mind.
I could be on death row and not have that situation.
Well, Samantha, when you're married, you have a different set of priorities.
Oh, honey, don't blame marriage. This man's married and she's not growing a national forest. How do you even cross your legs? Let me make you a spa appointment. Any thicker and you won't be able to find it.
So,
I've cut my label off there. Thank you very much for the scissors. There you go. All is going in the fashion stakes. Things have improved greatly. You were listening to that clip, Phil, because you're tidying up.
Waxing.
But it's about.
I've seen it on the telly.
Miranda has got some hair on the inside of her legs, which apparently is a crime against humanity. But at least it's quite a funny clip, and it is a funny film. There are funny things in it. So I found it. I enjoyed it very much. If I had to give it out of five, I'd give it 3 out of 5. You know, it works. It's like watching a lot of episodes strung together without adverts. And
did you get? Did you go with Mrs. Collins to this?
Yeah, but I was the only man in the cinema yesterday.
Did you go because you knew you were reviewing
it for us?
I wanted to see it.
We both wanted to see it. You know, I actually genuinely wanted to see it to see how they translated a very successful format, which, don't forget, they're about half an hour, the episodes, once you take the adverts out. They're not very long. Could this work over, you know, over 2 hours? And it kind of does. But as I say, at the expense of Samantha, who doesn't get much of a story, and, you know, the dark-haired one. Oh, I forget her name off.
Don't look to me.
The actress is called Kristen, isn't she?
Oh, yeah.
Charlotte, she's called. Somebody already shouted. Literally texted you already. Charlotte doesn't get much of a story, so never mind about that.
Fionn has just emailed us. I loved it. It didn't take a genius to figure out the plot of the film, but that was never the point of Sex and the City. It's not CSI. It's all about the clothes, the laughs, the ladies and their men, and what they do with them, and there was plenty of that. I was shocked when I realised 2 hours had gone by. Give us more. Now give me my Cosmopolitan.
It cost $65 million to make. That must have all gone on the fees for the four lead actresses, which is a great amount of money to spend on actresses, you know, who traditionally don't get as much as actors. I mean, that's a good thing in itself, because it doesn't cost much to make this. There's one little trip to Mexico, but by and large it's just wandering about and sitting in apartments. So $65 million.
We played a clip of an interview I did last year with Kim Cattrall, funnily enough, when she'd just done a film with Brendan Gleeson, who you mentioned for In Bruges.
Brilliant.
And she all virtually quite explicitly admitted that they were haggling over fees to star in
this. Well, that's why it took so long to get off the ground. Well, they've done it now, and even it's like going to see the Pixies live. You know they hate each other, but it doesn't matter. They're playing the old song.
Stuart in Littlehampton sent me an email, phil@bbc.co.uk. So, we now have the world's first epic-length chick flick, God Help Men Everywhere. If the undoubtable financial success of this film starts a trend, no longer will we have the quick, relatively painless 90-minute brownie pointer at our disposal to keep our ladies on aside and stop them moaning when we insist on dragging them to the latest superhero movie. Now, we're going to have to pay with blood and sweat and tears for 2.5 hours for those brownie points. I always felt the people behind Sex and the City were men haters, but did they really have to use the film's running time to embody these views?
That's great. I love the people who listen to this programme. We don't need to speak. Also, interestingly, because it is about consumerism and labels and all that stuff, I wonder if it might be the last gasp of American capitalism before the Great Depression sets in. You know, this may be seen as a kind of weird historical artifact in about 2 years' time when nobody can afford any shoes.
Even budgets were an issue on this film because there was a programme on Channel 4 about the making of it, and the costume designer was saying that one of the outfits wasn't quite right, but she just took a pair of scissors to it instead of ordering another one.
Just like I just did.
Exactly.
I thought that the first four things that Carrie wears in the film look bloody horrible.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, just horrible. She's got this great big flower on
her
dress.
But the flower's a theme, isn't it? It's a theme.
Well, I understand. Terrible. What do I know?
So, 3 out of 5 for Sex and the City.
Yeah.
He liked it. We're doing movies with Andrew Collins this week, and he's giving you his verdict on Sex and the City. And the next one we're going to talk about is Welcome Home, Roscoe Jenkins, about which I know nothing.
Well, you know, interesting, talking about demographics, this is a film which is clearly aimed, it's a comedy, Welcome Home, Roscoe Jenkins, starring Martin Lawrence. It's an all-black comedy, the entire cast are black. It's about being black in the sense that he is now a sophisticated daytime talk show host, and he's got his trophy girlfriend, and she's got a dog in a bag. And they go back to his homestead, basically, in Georgia. And it's about the clash of cultures. And a huge cast of mainly black stand-up comedians, including, we've got Mike Epps, other people you've seen in other films like this. There's also a couple of old stalwarts. James Earl Jones is in there. Michael Clark Duncan. And what it basically is one of those films that seems to be aimed at an African-American audience in America, which is a huge, huge audience there. But it's incredibly broad. You know, films like Norbit, Eddie Murphy films, Martin Lawrence films, generally anything with Ice Cube, they're hugely successful there, but they seem to be aimed at a particular demographic. And this, I wish that wasn't the case, because this is about the broadest comedy. It's got, if I tell you one joke in it, involves a man being sprayed by a skunk in the face. That's the high level of humour here. And yet it is an interesting subject. It's about this guy who comes back and has to go back to, you know, his roots and face down what happened to him as a kid, and they think he's got ideas about his station. That's really interesting. But it's painted in such broad strokes, it won't even fit on a widescreen cinema because it's too broad. And so I found it really, really disappointing. In fact, dispiriting. You know, I really wanted to gouge my heart out with a trowel.
Now, again, now that you mentioned this, right, I went running past the poster for this one on Wednesday night, and again, I thought, that tells me all I need to know. This is going to be rubbish.
Well, it's Martin Lawrence gurning. I mean, how on earth he's become so successful? I mean, the first time I saw him was in Bad Boys, and that was a pretty good film, Bad Boys. But he seems to have got into this. It's not a rut, because he's become a huge multimillionaire off the back of it, but it's huge sort of gurning films. Like Eddie Murphy suddenly turned into just a gurner and wearing a fat suit. Martin Lawrence has pretty much done the same thing. As I say, they're hugely successful. But this is just, I really hope nobody goes to see this. Unfortunately, they have in America. It'd be great if no one did anywhere else, and then they would have to stop doing it or just raise their game a bit, you know, just make it a bit more interesting, a bit more intelligent.
So not worth a visit?
No, really not, I don't think, unless you think skunk spraying a man in the face is funny. And you don't, and I don't, and it's just, you know, it's not good enough, is it?
I've seen funnier things.
Yeah.
Gary in Belfast, did you just say that Sex and the City clip was funny? If that's as funny as Sex and the City is, I'll stick with Norbit.
Well, you have to find the subject of waxing funny to find that clip funny, and we are expected to find waxing funny.
So that one's no good. And what's your next one then?
Well, California Dreaming is very good. It's a Romanian film made by, it's first time film by Christian Nemescu, his first time feature, who died tragically in a car accident after it had won a prize at Cannes last year. And so basically it was an unfinished film, so it's long, it's longer than Sex and the City. It's a tremendous film. It could have been better if he'd lived, you know, to actually sit down and edit it properly. But it's set in 1999. It's about a NATO troop train being stuck in a rural Romanian village, which is on its way to Yugoslavia. And Armando Sante plays the American commander of these NATO troops. And it's basically about sort of rural life. And it's very scathing of Romanian politics and even local politics, because everyone's corrupt.
Now, how many cinemas is this going to find?
It will find its way around the country, I think.
It needs to be more your corner house.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, Sex and the City and Indiana Jones will push it out of the multiplexes, but really, really worth seeing. It's, as I say, it's a bit too long, and it certainly could have been better, but certainly it's a tragic subtext to it. But it's a really, really funny film and a really interesting film, and it's about the relationship between the Romanians in this village and the Americans, who they kind of see as the people who should have come and saved them during the war. And are they here to save them now?
No, so if you can find it at the cinema in the UK, California California Dreaming. Yeah, look,
really good. That's my film of the week, because Chemical Wedding, which is the next film, is not anyone's film of the week. Bruce Dickinson of Iron Maiden, who I know because he used to work with DJ at Six Music, is a fantastic individual. Never mind the fact that he flies planes and is in Iron Maiden. That's amazing in itself. But he's a really nice fellow. Unfortunately, he's obsessed, as all heavy metal stars are, by Aleister Crowley, the most evil man in the world. And in this film, which he's written, co-written with the director Julian Doyle, who directed some Iron Maiden videos, so it's a little clique of people. It's a terrible film. It's, you know, in the 1970s, you used to get a lot of kind of devil worshipping horror movies. It's like that, except it's set in the modern age. And Simon Callow plays a Cambridge University professor who is basically possessed by the spirit of Aleister Crowley and starts weeing on his students and their orgies and stuff. It's got an 18 certificate, but frankly, you can see this stuff on MTV.
Right. Okay.
So don't go there for the sex.
Chemical Wedding, that's...
Yeah, never listen to an Iron Maiden record instead. Yeah. I would say, if you like Bruce Dickinson.
I wonder why he's decided to do that, Bruce.
He's really clearly interested in the subject, and at the beginning, I was interested as well, but unfortunately it becomes a kind of weird sci-fi horror farce.
All of which leaves Zoo.
Zoo, well, it's a difficult one, this, because it's a dramatised documentary about a true story. In 2005, a guy in Washington State who died after having sex with a horse. I might as well just get the subject out of the way. That's what it's about. Now, you wouldn't want to go and see a film about that, normally, but it's beautifully made the way they've chosen to make it, and it doesn't show anything, of course not. It's just real testimony of real people involved in this zoophile ring, and it's a really, really difficult subject, but it's done in a really sensitive and non-judgmental way. It's not an advert for what they do. It certainly condemns it. It was legal in Washington State when they did it. The law was changed afterwards. Genuinely.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's an interesting story. It's done really well. It got 4 stars in The Guardian today from Peter Bradshaw, which I think was a brave thing. And I won't say seek it out. It's probably one you'll see eventually on Channel 4, I guess, or it'll be on Storyville or something. So it'll probably end up on television. But it's not something to be frightened of. It's an interesting area.
And is there something else left?
Yeah, The Unwinking Gaze, which sounds better than it is. The Unwinking Gaze is about a Dalai Lama, and the gaze is the gaze of Buddha. Apparently he looked at a tree for a long time without winking. And this is a close-up documentary. Spends 3 years with the Dalai Lama. Fascinating, and not a Free Tibet kind of placard waving film. It's a very impartial film. Very interesting insight into the court of the Dalai Lama as he goes about his business. And you hear him laugh all the way through. It's really nice. I've never heard him laugh before. Have you?
The Dalai Lama?
He's got a lovely, chuckly, throaty laugh.
Have you heard Milton Jones' good joke about the Dalai Lama?
You can tell me it.
He says, I pledged some money to a charity, thinking I was doing the right thing. He said it was all about a freedom movement. Next thing, a big, long-necked animal arrived at my front door. Turned out I'd pledged money to Dalai Lama.
See, very, very good. He's good with the English language.
Very
bloke.
Good.
Very good. So, this is not going to go very far around the cinemas, I don't think, but I found it very interesting. So there you go. How about
so
that?
So your film of the week is...
It's got to be California Dreaming, because it's the best film. It's got the most substance to it, and you don't know what you're going to get. And it's very interesting insight into the Romanian mindset.
Jen says, my father-in-law is a vicar, and he loves Sex and the City. We bought him the box set for Christmas.
There you go.
What else have we got here? Tanya, who's in Thundery, Cornwall. That's a great description of where you are. I watched the series. The early ones were diverting, but I got fed up with liberated women having spontaneous, passionate sex, still wearing their bras. I got fed up with the product placement and the shallowness. I can't wait for Euro 2008, and neither can my man. I'm a Scotland fan supporting Germany with leanings towards France and Italy. He's not supporting anyone.
They still keep their bras on in the film, but if you want to see some really tight buttocked men, there's quite a lot of those in it. In Sex and the City, there's a hell of a lot. There's a really long lingering shot of a man having a shower with nothing on, and you actually see a glimpse of his male member in a 15 certificate film.
The Right Honourable Member for New York.
Yeah.
Rosie says, as a single female, I wouldn't fill my mind with such superficial, childish, boring, tacky drivel. Does she mean Sex and the City or us?
I don't know.
It's not all females.
We're high-minded today.
We're too highfalutin. It's not all females that are dumbed down. It's some people, says Rosie. We weren't suggesting it was dumbed down, were we?
No, I don't think so. It's complicated in terms of consumerism, capitalism, but not stupid.
Andrew, thanks very much for your company.
Thank you.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.